This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello and welcome to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Another big show in store. Some big transfer stories are doing the rounds yet again. We've got updates on Cesc Fabregas. His move has been blocked. If you're with us on Facebook Live, you will see exactly that. Find out why very shortly. Some updates on Gonzalo Higuain. Pepe officially returns to Porto and a whole lot more. Some action in Europe as well overnight. League Cup with Tottenham and Chelsea doing battle. We'll preview the City-Burton clash, which is to come tonight. And some news out of Africa as well. A new AFCON, African Cup of Nations, host for 2019. And the African Player of the Year announced from 2018. Not too hard to guess who that player is. As always, you're with myself, Adriano Del Monte, and Rick D'Andrea. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours. The entirety of the program available live via our app or our website, footballnationradio.com. Of course, the first hour live here on Facebook Live. Welcome to you, Rick.
Good afternoon to you, Adrian.
Scores and news, as always, as we normally do, and we'll get into it.
As always. And we'll start with that bit of news out of Africa to start the news headlines. And Egypt has won the right to host the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations in June. Egypt beat South Africa by 16 votes in hosting the event. Why this has happened, a lot of people might be asking, is that Cameroon were originally selected to host the showpiece event, but unfortunately they were stripped of it because of slow preparation and progression.
That is interesting, Rick. You see that happen all the time with potential host, but it's actually happened. They've exactly stripped them here.
And there's an actual forward story, because this actually could impact the Ivory Coast and Guinea, the next two holders of the next two editions of the African Cup of Nations. There's a lot going on here politically as well. So we'll get into that story, I think maybe at the end of the news hit, but there's plenty more on that, and I'll tell you why. And of course, as I said a moment ago, other news out of the African continent, Liverpool and Faroe star Mohamed Salah has won his second consecutive CAF Player of the Year award. Congratulations there. He scored 44 goals for club and country in 2018 and won the English Premier League Golden Boot Award. Speaking of results, there's plenty of those this morning. Tottenham have taken a one-goal lead, and that's what George has actually come through on our Facebook Live. They have taken a one-goal lead into the second leg of their Carabao Cup semi-final clash, narrowly defeating Chelsea 1-0. A controversial VAR decision involving Harry Kane and a penalty was converted from the Spurs by the Spurs captain just before the half-hour mark, and now that moves him, as well as the England captain, into the fourth place on the all-time Spurs leading goal scorer list. Congratulations there to him. In other cup action, diverting our attention to France, Strasbourg has defeated good old Lyon 2-1. Another team similar to Liverpool, Champions League and Ligue 1 action really to focus on, while Sporting Gijon have beaten Valencia 2-1 in the Copa del Rey round of 16 first leg. There were some catch-up fixtures in Ligue 1. Amiens and Angers played out a scoreless draw, while Nantes overcame a 10-man Montpellier outfit to beat them 2-0 and get themselves away from the relegation zone. There are also two games played overnight in the Asian Cup. There's so many results as well, with Iraq claiming a 3-2 win over Vietnam, while Saudi Arabia hammered a 10-man North Korea 4-0. And the biggest transfer that has been confirmed overnight, other than the Pepe to Porto one that we brought you yesterday, is that Barcelona have announced 19-year-old Jean-Claude Thibaudot has signed for them from Toulouse. He will be going there on a Bosman transfer in June for free. He's already played 10 games for the Pink City club, and he's going to be joining other Frenchmen at the team, Samuel Umtiti, Clement Lenglet, and of course Ousmane Dembele. And there's even news about him when we talk about transfers a little bit later on over the next few hours. Adrian, that is a recap of all the news. Thanks, guys, already coming through. Jack said, great show, boys, and we've only been a couple of minutes in. Thank you, Jack.
Just loves your news reading, Rick.
It's not that great, but hopefully it'll improve over the next few weeks and months and years. And Tass wants us to say hi to him. So hi, Tass. There you are.
Hi, Tass. Hello to everyone joining us again, either via our app, our website, or more importantly at the moment, live on Facebook. If you are with us there, you'll see our headlines for the day. Spurs beat Chelsea. Kane sets record. Fabregas transfer blocked. We'll get into the transfer stories a little later on, but as we always do, we start with the news on the pitch. And George, our resident Tottenham fan, the great Spurs star of the past, Cliff Jones, believes Kane will surpass the efforts of the three greats who stand ahead of him on the club's top scorers list. So if you didn't hear Rick moments ago, his goal this morning, Tottenham defeat Chelsea in the League Cup first leg semi-final 1-0. He's now fourth all-time. It's also, he scored in six straight games. Mm-hmm. And so he's building into some good form again. And only the second time in his career he's done that. However, Nick has come through on Facebook Live. Kane was offside. And it's in capitals, Rick. Take us through what took place here.
So 23rd minute of the match. A long ball is played towards Harry Kane. Contentiously one way or another. Nick seems to think it's one way.
Other people think it's that way.
VAR and a lot of the referees, and Michael Oliver as well, thought it may have been going the other way. There was a decision where Harry Kane is in line with several Chelsea defenders. He has skipped past the offside trap. One-on-one with the goalkeeper, gets a first touch to the ball. Kepa, the Spaniard, outstretches to try and stop the ball from advancing too far past him. Clips Kane's feet, brings him down, does a bit of a somersault, gets a 10 in my eyes if you are at the Olympic Games and at the gymnastics or at the diving. One of the two. Nonetheless, Michael Oliver looks at his referee assistant to the sidelines, sees that his flag is up. So he has called for offside at this stage. But before Oliver decides to actually point to the spot, he says, you know what, guys? We're going to check this upstairs. Smart movie made. They looked at it. Took a good 3 to 4 minutes to look at it, but they discovered that Kane was actually, I hate to say this, onside. Cesar Zipaquelta's left leg was actually tracking back, and that was the difference.
From the look of the replay though, Rick, his legs were off, but his body was off, but his legs were
correct.
On. So where his feet were on, but it did look as if
correct
he was off. But still, They're not happy.
They're not happy, no, because you can argue both ways, because the body is also part of the offside rule, and therefore that should obviously say, well, you know, what if the body's a part of it, then he's off. Mm. But the referee, the VAR, they took their time, and they called for it to the point of where the feet were contacting the pitch, and that meant that he was on. Secondly, when Kane was actually brought down, there was a bit of an issue I felt that really, well, Harry Kane, yes, he may have come down, but he did go looking for that contact. Mm. If you actually have a look, a couple of angles show him and his right foot actually go out, stretch out a little bit more than would be accustomed to, and look to clip Kepa. Even though Kepa was there, and you would say 9 times out of 10, it is and should be given as a penalty. It is tough, but the tough calls need to be made.
That is true.
You could also argue as to why it shouldn't have been.
Again, without going into another VAR discussion, that's what we always discuss about it. Even if it was soft, the VAR needs to call it as it sees it. And the grey area of the VAR in these calls is where you could look at it as a referee and think, well, you know what, that actually wasn't as severe a foul as I initially thought. Maybe Harry Kane is looking for the penalty, but the foul was still there. And that's where the issues come about with the VAR. George believes that you should write thriller novels, Rick.
One day. Everyone does say that they do have a novel in them. Maybe one day in a couple of years' time, I might decide to sit at the computer
again,
and do that.
Just a quick word. I'd like to read those, but just a quick word on that. We discuss these in the World Cup in serious depth. But again, if there is grey area for the VAR, that's why these decisions take 3 to 4 minutes. Mm. 3 to 4 minutes for these decisions to be made are taken because the referee needs to make another decision.
Correct.
It's not goal line technology where the ball's crossed the line or it hasn't. It's that the referee needs to spend some time to make another decision. That's where the issues lie with this. Again, I don't like referring to it as technology, but the technology in this case.
Yeah, what I also found very interesting is I was actually having a listen to the commentary on one of the sites that I was actually watching it off at home. And it was very, very interesting to hear them say, VAR has made this decision very quickly and gotten it right.
3 to 4 minutes.
3 to 4 minutes, and that's the big issue that we've generally had between you and I, is 3 to 4 minutes is actually not it's actually quite a long time when it comes to a decision.
That's a very long time.
So all of a sudden, you've got commentators and pundits at the, you know, at the hall, at the coalface, saying 3 to 4 minutes is actually, you know, it's half respectable, it's okay. Whereas the person in the stands or those at home like us, we're saying that's not okay.
The other element which we've discussed before is players score. They don't know whether the goal is a goal.
That's the horrible thing about it.
Well,
isn't
it takes a little away from the celebration. They're not 100% sure. Is that a legitimate goal? Do I celebrate? Do I enjoy this moment? Because so often we've seen, and there was a moment recently, I recall in a Serie A game, Juve-Sampdoria, where Saponara scored a dramatic 92nd minute equaliser to make it 2-2. What a goal it was. And not one ounce of him thought that the goal wouldn't stand. But then the VAR checked it for some reason, and, well, they got it right because there was an offside that wasn't called. So there are these moments, but we'll discuss that in more depth, I'm sure, as the VAR is implemented into the EPL next season. Peter's come through. Good afternoon to you, Peter. Well done, guys. You're my lunchtime fix. Thank you. Harry Kane, it's like goal line technology is the ball over the line completely, as is Harry Kane's feet. Again, a tough one, but in the end, they're probably made the right call there.
Yeah, I think ultimately when push comes to shove, unfortunately, Nick, I hate to say this, but Harry Kane is ultimately seen as being onside, and therefore the goal should have stood.
So 1-0, they're in the box seat to go through. And we discussed yesterday, a few questions came through, well, what can Tottenham win? Can Tottenham win anything this season? Is this a chance? The FA Cup, are these their opportunities to win silverware? Well, given the fact they've got 1 foot in the final now, I guess so. They're looking good after this very important win for them.
Well, they're in the box seat, and when you factor in that they've also beaten Chelsea the last 3 times they've actually played one another, you'd have to say, well, going into the second leg when you have to travel to Stamford Bridge, any result in Tottenham's favour, doesn't matter if it's a 1-0 draw, doesn't matter if it's a 6-0 draw, doesn't matter even if it's a 1-0 scrappy affair, whatever it is, Tottenham, like you said, are in the box seat to go through to their to another EFL Cup final.
Well, they go get the away goal, and that will almost be that. Could be a very different look Chelsea side when the two teams next meet. So many stories on Chelsea to come. Higuain, Morata, Benzema, Fabregas, just some of the names we'll discuss with regards to Chelsea very shortly. But Tottenham win it by 1-0, and they will face, should they continue and hold on to this lead in the second leg, the winner of the City-Burton tie, which the first leg will be tomorrow morning. We'll preview that in the second hour of the program.
Well, you speak of, just briefly, you speak of many names that might be missing for Chelsea. There's one name that I'm still interested to see is in the Spurs lineup because his nation hasn't yet played at the Asian Cup.
Surprise, he played.
So obviously the countdown is on. We know South Korea will be playing, and I'm of course talking about here Hwang Sun-min. He still did feature. He played his part, whatever that was, of course, for Mauricio Pochettino's men. But it'll be interesting to see when the return leg is played, he won't be around for it. This will be late January. He won't be going around in this game or in the return fixture.
Interesting. Wasn't aware that he would still be playing there, but they are in action soon at the Asian Cup. But started in this one, didn't play the full 90 minutes, but Tottenham still win by 1-0. City Burton tomorrow morning. Again, preview of that to come a bit later on. One match in, well, there was some league action, as you said, this morning. Ligue 1, Amiens 0, Angers 0. Nantes 2, Montpellier 0. So for Montpellier, a bad week turns a little worse.
Soured. Even more so than normal. Nantes get the points here. And Montpellier, unfortunately, they're just sort of detaching themselves from that sort of top three, top four that they'd been in, you know, for more or less the last, say, 6 or 7 match days of Ligue 1. And they were seen to be the team that could challenge the likes of Lille, Lyon, who is now starting to rise and now getting themselves into top three. But with that home record that they've had on the road is where the issues at Montpellier have had. Most teams do tend to have that this season, but unfortunately, just let a couple of little goals slip in here, and 2-0 was the ultimate result, and that sees them drop a little bit more.
They did play with 10 men for 71 minutes here. One of their attackers sent off for a terrible challenge, but 2-0 against Nantes. They're still in the top four, though, but it is tightening up. Certainly in that part of the Ligue 1 table here. The standings with PSG well clear. Still 2 games to play, meaning that Lille, who are second, who have played 19 games thus far, they've got very little hope of catching them. But it is that race for European football, and Montpellier may have shot themselves in the foot now. No win in 3, and only 1 goal in that time as well. So very tough for Montpellier, but they go out of the Coupe de France, and now a defeat in Ligue 1. So a bad start to the new year for this side. No win in four in all competitions. And in fact, it's one win in their last seven. That was a 2-1 at Monaco. And most teams have won there, Rick. Elsewhere, Asian Cup results you mentioned. Iraq with a 3-2 win over Vietnam. Saudi Arabia 4, North Korea 0. Lyon out of the Coupe de la Ligue. Speaking of French football, Strasbourg taking care of them. So another big team bundled out of another cup competition in France.
And it could have been a very different story had Nabil Fekir actually converted his penalty on the stroke of half time. Mm-hmm. Could have been 1-0 going into the break there, but unfortunately he scuffed it, and that was that. Lyon 1, Strasbourg 2.
Do you find it strange in England and France have played two different cup competitions in the space of 4 days?
Just a little. But when you obviously, and it's the case in England as well, like you just sort of said, when you do have to start off with the FA Cup, the EFL Cup, the Coupe de la Ligue, and of course the Coupe de France, you sort of have to use all these times, all these January moments to try and catch up and play as many of these games as possible.
So Strasbourg are through to the semi-finals of the Coupe de la Ligue. Three games still to be played in the quarterfinals. Monaco, Rennes tomorrow morning, Bordeaux, Le Havre, PSG, Gangomp. So the four semi-finals will be confirmed tomorrow morning. Looking forward to that. Certainly PSG in the box seat to do the domestic treble again.
Could be, what, 3 and 4 years or something to that effect?
Won't be enough for them, though. They need the Champions League. We know that. One match in the Copa del Rey. You said it's Sporting Gijon 2, Valencia 1. We said yesterday Marcelino was under fire for
the results that he hasn't gotten, really.
The recent results. First leg here, so they're not eliminated just yet, but they lose 2-1 at a lower-level side. That's a terrible result. And, again, failure to win yet again. So they had started to put together some winning form in La Liga, having not won too many games this season at all. But on the verge of elimination here is not going to bode well for his future at the club.
No, but luckily that team was, or Losquer were able to actually get an away goal. They do go to the Mestalla for the second leg, so they give themselves a little bit of hope. Their home form is a lot better than it is on the road. And Sporting Gijon, actually, they're in Liga Segunda. They're actually, I think they're second or third, maybe even fourth.
Look, I don't care where they are. Valencia are
a
much bigger
side. What I'm trying to say is they're a yo-yo team that have managed to sort out their finances, sort out their issues, and now they're actually playing some half-decent football. They actually probably have dropped down a little bit more than what I last remembered seeing them as. So they're sort of sorting themselves out. Mm. They're not a bad team. Watch out for them. They might be able to sort of play a few men behind the ball and maybe sneak a couple of results in the second leg.
Mid-table side in the second division, and Valencia losing there is a disaster. They will need to go through in the second leg when that resumes. But, of course, the action tomorrow morning, City should cruise through against Burton in the FA Cup. Full preview of that to come in the second hour. You'd imagine so.
How many? Simple as that for me. How many
goals?
That was
a 7-0 win a couple of days ago against Rotherham in the FA Cup. Could they do another 5-6 more?
Wouldn't surprise me if it is, say, a good 3-0, maybe even a 4-0 type splattering tomorrow morning in that one.
I mentioned the Coupe de la Ligue fixtures to come. Japan, the first nation in action tonight in the Asian Cup against Turkmenistan. And, of course, Copa del Rey. Interesting games tomorrow morning. Real Madrid, Leganes, Villarreal, Espanyol. It's quite a big one for a Copa del Rey for two sides who have been in no form at all in La Liga. Getafe, Valladolid and Girona take on Atletico Madrid. We'll preview those in the second hour. But that's your results on the pitch. But as always at this time of year, all the news is coming off the pitch. And I don't know where to start with because there are so many stories. We'll start with Chelsea. We open with Chelsea with them on the pitch. We'll start here off the pitch. Now, the big news off the pitch, as per our Facebook Live headline, is that the Fabregas transfer has been blocked. Maurizio Sarri is unwilling to let Fabregas leave, despite he already having farewelled his teammates, having farewelled the supporters, having walked off to an ovation. He's not willing to let him go until a replacement comes in. Now, Barella from Cagliari and Paredes from Zenit are the two names that Sky Sports in England are suggesting will be the replacements, one of, at the very least. Cagliari, in actual fact, the mid-table Serie A side, have already made a move and had a bid accepted for Nandez, a midfielder from Boca Juniors. So Cagliari already replacing Barella, who's a highly rated, highly touted young up-and-coming Italian midfielder. There's a link with Sarri. Paredes, of course, has been on the radar of Chelsea before. He, too, has experience in Serie A. But for Fabregas, if one of these players aren't signed, he may be going nowhere.
He might be playing some football in the reserves in the under-23 squad for a few more weeks and months to come, to be perfectly honest, if that's the case.
Well, Sarri saying no, you can understand, we said this, if they lose Fabregas, they can't afford to lose too many players without bringing in a replacement. They've had their issues of late. Fabregas has been one of their best players of late when he's been on the park. Mm. They can't just offload him for next to nothing and not replace that player. So even if a Barella or a Paredes were to come in and join this squad, they may not see too many minutes, but in the case of an injury, substitution, whatever the case is, they need that depth there. They cannot just rely on Jorginho, Kante, Kovacic.
Danny Drinkwater's a name that sort of gets thrown up as well. Ruben Loftus-Cheek as well. So there are a few names, but I'm also interested to find out, well, don't Chelsea have one of the biggest loan squads around Europe and the world?
They do.
Don't they loan out some 30-odd players each year?
They do.
Don't you think they might have one or two waiting in the wings, maybe that could be brought in or forced an end, a termination of their loan halfway through?
Probably not at the level of Fabregas. No, that's what they see in
That's very true. But if they're going to go for a Barella, a 19-year-old, or a Leandro Paredes, why couldn't they just try and bring someone in that they already have on the books, maybe sort of patch things up for 6 months, and then already know that in 6 months' time, they already still have a Christian Pulisic coming into the team that might be able to integrate better into that midfield.
Of course. I almost forgot that they've already signed Pulisic. But I guess there's a bit more of a role in store for the new arrival, and that's why they don't just want to recall someone on loan. I think that, look, Barella, as I said, one of the highly rated midfielders coming out of Italy, and Paredes was close to making the move from Zenit in the summer. Both players could have a role to play under Maurizio Sarri at the Blues. I'm interested to see what happens with Fabregas, though, if one doesn't come in. Because it's very strange. We saw Mario Balotelli, of course, farewell Nice and stay at the club. It could happen. Lightning could strike twice here with Cesc Fabregas, obviously, potentially set to face the same fate there. But
it'd be awkward, wouldn't it?
It'd be very awkward. But he has agreed that deal. The 2.5-3 year deal, whatever it is, has been agreed. He has, though, according to Sky Sports, he has now returned to London. So after being in Monaco, he has returned to London. But the news continues at Chelsea because their search for a striker is now well and truly underway. Now, a lot of reports here. Morata to Sevilla. We said yesterday that he met with the agent. His agent met with Sevilla representatives. According to reports out of Spain and England, Morata and Sevilla have agreed a deal to see him move on loan for the second half of the season with an obligation to buy at season's end. That would suit Chelsea just fine. But then again, they need to bring someone else in. Who?
Well,
who do they bring
there's
in?
There's one name that we keep mentioning.
There is one.
He happens to play at Milan. He hasn't featured that much or done that well. And yes, that is, of course, Gonzalo Higuain.
That is one. There is another one. But before we get there, on Gonzalo Higuain, there are some words that have been doing the rounds recently from Leonardo. Harsh words directed towards Gonzalo Higuain. Leonardo, of course, former Milan coach, former Milan player, and now director of the club. He said, he's here right now, Gonzalo Higuain. Seeing as he's here, he needs to get down and actually do something for this team. He has to take responsibility. That's harsh. Very harsh words from a director of the club for a player who just 12 months ago was one of the best strikers in Europe for seasons on end. They're strong words, but to me, they're strong words that have some meaning behind it, potentially with Higuain making it clear he wants out.
Will they resonate with him, though? As in, if he doesn't go and he doesn't move, will this be the impetus that a lot of Rossoneri supporters want? You know, the big old kick up the backside to get him going and spur him on.
Maybe. Maybe, but maybe not. And that's a problem when you're spending so much money for a player, because maybe or maybe not isn't enough. You need a guarantee there. And for Higuain to Chelsea, if he is to make the move, it's 5 years too late, because Chelsea have been interested in Higuain. I've always thought Higuain would have been a great fit at Chelsea. They were interested in him when he was still, before he'd even moved to Napoli.
Well, post-Fernando Torres. Post-Torres and post-even before Diego Costa, really.
Even before Diego Costa. So it's been a long time for Higuain. They've had their chances, but again, it may be 5 years too late, but I still think he has a role to play with all that quality in around him there. He showed at Juventus he can still be one of the most lethal strikers. He had that record over the last four seasons in Italy where he was the top goal scorer across the four seasons combined. I think he won two Coppa Cannonieri awards in that time.
Yep.
Regardless, he was the top goal scorer for four seasons collectively. Top player, but needs top players around him. And that has not been the case at AC Milan this season. And I think the move would certainly suit the player. However, There cannot be any guarantees with that because obviously Juventus are in the equation there. They own the player on loan at Milan, so it's a little difficult to facilitate a deal now. So the other player that has come up in recent reports from Spain, Karim Benzema. Now, Karim Benzema, I'm certain, will leave eventually Real Madrid. He's been linked to Arsenal for so many years. Obviously, the French link's there. But now, they're saying that Karim Benzema could be the man to replace Morata at Chelsea. How do you think he'd fare there at Chelsea with his current squad, keeping in mind that, again, Eden Hazard could very well go the other way?
It's tough for me to see Benzema going because he's actually been one of, and I hate to say this, he's actually been one of Real Madrid's best players this season. Sure, he hasn't gotten the goals that he would normally get with one Cristiano Ronaldo next to him, but with what he's been able to do with, say, Isco, Asensio and Bale, where he's been able to obviously assist and open up the space for those guys, not only to score but to have chances on goal, especially from long range, he'd be a big blow leaving Real Madrid. And if he were to go to Chelsea, well, Chelsea needs someone who actually scores goals. Yes. Benzema at the moment is setting them up, or he's
bit of a provider.
They've already got that with Giroud, and they've definitely got that with Morata at this stage. So if you're going to get a goal scorer, Karim Benzema is probably not the right person, given what he has done and the body of work he's displayed over the last couple of seasons.
Understood. And I agree with that. I think that they could do with a Higuain who's going to guarantee him 20-plus goals. Benzema has his strengths, but I don't know if that's what Chelsea require at the moment. They have enough providers in that squad, with or without Eden Hazard, is the reality there. So, interesting here. Morata, for me, is the one I'm most confident with. With all those players we've just said, I think Morata to Sevilla could very well happen. I think Chelsea will need to find another avenue to goal, though, and very, very quickly, because obviously they lose Morata. He hasn't scored too many goals this season, but then they're that little thinner up front.
It is. I'm interested with Morata, though. If he were to make the move to Seville, how would that go in the Europa League? Because Chelsea are also still in the Europa League. We know that the cup tie rule has been
abolished
this season across European competitions, but Chelsea would be loaning one player, or their player, to a team that is still in the Europa League. So it would
be a bit of a direct rival?
Bit of a direct rival. It's also the Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang type rule, where if Arsenal were to have met Dortmund last season, he wouldn't have been able to play. I'm wondering what's going to happen here with this one. This might be a little bit of a different thing going around. I'd love to see what does happen.
Well, again, these are rumours at this stage, but if they do take place, it will be interesting to see how they all fit into place there. But Chelsea with a busy winter period ahead, and with that busy fixture list as well, with all their competition involvement, looking forward to it. Morata to Sevilla, would that work for the player? We'll see. A return to Spain, has he played his best football there? Probably not, but who knows. Andres Silva came off a very tough season AC Milan, went to Sevilla, and now he's one of the hottest prospects in world football. Maybe the same for Morata. That's the latest at Chelsea. Let's stay in England while we're there, and let's go to a report from France Football, Rick. Concerns Manchester United. Their dream signing continues to be one Kalidou Koulibaly. Now, Koulibaly, of course, the Napoli centre-back, who he's arguably the best central defender in world football, certainly up there. Hard to dispute if you've seen him closely, but he's an individual who continues to be linked with Man United, as are many players, but United had legitimate interest in him in the summer. A reported near €100 million bid rejected by Napoli, which was recently confirmed. But they're saying they're going to go again. And maybe not as early as January, but they are going to go again as they look to reinforce and strengthen their defensive unit.
For me, it's as simple as this with Manchester United and Kalidou Koulibaly. Find out who your coach is going to be in June. Once you find that out, then you work out what players the team needs or what players the coaches want. Because what would happen if there is a new coach that is installed and he does not want Kalidou Koulibaly? What would happen then? You'd be wasting €100 million.
Understood. But you have to say that a central defender is probably the easiest position to fit into any system.
Yes, I agree with
more
that.
More or less the same role.
I agree with that. But what would happen if the manager, whoever it happens to be, plays a three-man defence rather than a four-man defence?
Yeah, sure.
You need a different type of central defender to fit into that mould. Needs to play a different style of football that is a little bit different. So maybe what we need to do is, with Koulibaly, hold your horses. We know the interest is there. Wait till June. get part one, which is get a new coach at Manchester United sorted out. It might be that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is given the role permanently. If so, then you already have your plans in place to go out and try and get the Napoli defender.
Yep.
But until you actually confirm who your boss is going to be from, say, June 1, 2019 onwards, I think it's silly to say Manchester United is going to spend 100 million plus euros on trying to get the Senegalese international across. Just briefly, on the Senegalese, he actually did get named in the CAF African Team of the Year, so congratulations there to him.
We'll get to all that team and the awards there shortly, but as Ivan said, the silly season has begun and everyone is linked to United. It always
That's
is
right.
the case this time That's of year,
right.
and another name to come shortly. But for Koulibaly, again, I think he'd fit into the system. Do Napoli want to part ways with him? Because keep in mind, Napoli are in their best run of form that they've been in for three decades.
Yep.
3 decades. If they have arguably the best defender in the league, if not the world, that will be a massive plus for them in their quest to dethrone Juventus. Do they want to sell him for any sum of money? How much better will defenders get than Koulibaly? Not much is my answer. So I think United face a tough test to get a hold of him. But the reports are saying he continues to be their dream acquisition. And, well, he'd probably be everyone's dream acquisition, wouldn't he? Given the quality he has there in defence. And I posted a tweet about it yesterday, but I said in the tweet that if United were seriously considering 60 million plus for Harry Maguire in the summer, with all due respect to the Leicester City man, this is a bargain. Koulibaly, again, Maguire, different class of central defender here, and I think we've seen that in his performances this season.
It is, and as Matt has actually come through on our Facebook, Carlo Ancelotti, the Napoli coach, will not let K2 Koulibaly go.
I don't think so. I think no one at Napoli will let him go because, again, how much better can this Napoli side get? Well, you can't get much better than the world's best central defender.
I can probably see this happening, and I don't know. I have to look into this. I might have to come back with some news tomorrow. Is I'd actually like to know what Koulibaly's release clause is. Because I sort of also go back to what happened with Gonzalo Higuain to Juventus, and the Napoli president, Aurelio De Laurentiis, always saying, we will not sell our best assets unless the team, the buying team, are willing to meet the release clause.
Yep.
I'd love to see what it is. If it is at 100, sure. There you are. The checkbook is there. Sign it. We will go. But I'd love to see what Koulibaly's release clause is. Once I know what it is, I'd say that would be the figure that De Laurentiis would be letting anybody leave for that figure.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to your research tomorrow. Matt's come through again. We've seen in the past Aurelio De Laurentiis, who, of course, the present owner of Napoli, like to make money and sell their top players, Cavani, Lavezzi, Higuain, etc. They've had some fine players, Napoli.
They have. Imagine that attack right now. That would be incredible in the Champions League.
When Cavani and Lavezzi were together with Hamsik, that was as good an attacking trio certainly in Italian football. And they did some wonderful things. Higuain, of course, coming in after Cavani's departure to Paris Saint-Germain. But those three together would be something else. But I don't think Higuain will return to Napoli. Cavani may. Those reports continue. Edinson Cavani, of course, likely for me to leave PSG at the end of the season. We'll leave it at a likely for now, just given the reports and everything that's been taking place over the course of the season. Return to Napoli would be very special. Would Napoli fans like to have him back? He's not getting any younger, but would they like to see him return?
I think it'd be for remembrance sakes and a bit of reminiscing of the old days. But
yeah, if sure. But again, this is a team that are playing their best football they've played for 3 decades. Again, collectively over recent seasons. Would Cavani, sure there's the romantic side, but would Cavani make them better? Would Cavani make them a serious challenger, which they are, but obviously to beat Juve, they're going to have to take it up a notch. Is Cavani the answer?
He'd certainly compliment the likes of Mertens and Insigne. I don't want to say either a resounding yes or a resounding no, but he'd certainly aid in obviously trying to progress this Napoli team through the Europa League this season and possibly even into the group stages from next season onwards.
All right, well, there could be a few big stars on the way to Serie A. Luka Modric, of course, continues to be one. The reports continue about him. As Matt says, yes, I would like to have Cavani return to Napoli. But let's stay in England. We were talking about Chelsea before as well. Two more in England, one in Manchester, one in Chelsea, and then we'll move across competitions. But Chelsea, the other one was Hudson-Odoi. Bayern Munich have made a fourth bid for the youngster, £35 million. Fourth bid. They're saying that, well, they've had the other three rejected. They're saying, we are very keen. Here's a little bit more. What are your thoughts? Again, Chelsea can ill afford to sell too many players with that. Again, not a thin squad, but clearly not as deep as a Man City.
I think this will happen. I think it may not happen in January. I could probably see this happening. Maybe the deal will be organised in January, similar to Pulisic, but the player will then ultimately move across to the Bavarian Giants in June. Why would you want to lose a player that you will need sometime this season? Sure, it is Eden Hazard that essentially is playing in Adoy's role, but you still need him if you know you need to rotate with the Belgian international. I do think Bayern Munich will land their man. Chelsea originally want 40. Mm-hmm. 35 maybe it might be enough to tempt them. Maybe a little bit more. Maybe a couple of million might see them go over the line. But Hudson-Odoi's deal will be done in January, in my eyes, from what my information is, and he will move across by June. Okay. That's the way I see it.
It could be a very important signing, that one, for Bayern Munich, who certainly need to add some quality to that lineup. And there was another one with Chelsea with Callum Wilson, the Bournemouth striker. Hearing some talk that they're looking at him as an alternative attacker for the strike force there, particularly if Morata is to leave, but it won't come cheap. I could see this one being one where Callum Wilson eventually leaves and is overvalued, overhyped. He may fulfil his potential, but again, I'm seeing 50 to 70, which I think is far too much for a Bournemouth striker.
It's a little bit too much in my eyes. And as Ivan has sort of come through, and as we were sort of touching on with Callum Hudson-Odoi, it's going with the times, more English players moving to Germany for game time. Well, with Bayern Munich, there is that opening as well. With Jadon Sancho, in that case, to bring it back to him, he forced his way into the team via the substitutes bench to ultimately have that great start, and ultimately we've seen what he's produced. Reece Nelson, there was that opening at Hoffenheim for a striker, and he's come through. So I guess with Callum, he'll probably need to work his way a little bit into it. He has to bet off Kingsley Coman to that number one left wing position. But we know Frank Ribery is departing come the end of this season.
It's something which I'm unsure about. English players moving to Germany again. Yes, Jadon Sancho has certainly paved the way, and his form and his what he's done has been incredible. But it's the first time that really English players have started to leave their own shores. And you see a lot of the top players across top competitions not necessarily leave their shores. So for English players, yes, I think they're paving the way. I've seen some tweets, particularly by some British journalists, suggesting that they've changed the game, these young English players. Well, not necessarily the case, because South American players don't always remain in South America, do they?
Nope.
They have to travel. African players often travel. Asian players often travel. So I think they're changing the game for English players.
English players,
they're not necessarily changing the mentality of the game. It's quite a bold statement to make. But for English players, I think for the national team as well, will only benefit them if these players are enhancing themselves, particularly technically, in these competitions. I think the technical growth that they will undergo, particularly in the likes of Spain and Germany, in the lower levels, or the youth ranks of the big clubs, they'll take themselves to another level. Yep. And as a result, the English national team will benefit.
Yep, give it another World Cup cycle and watch what happens. I really can't wait for that.
Yeah, I'm very excited, Rick. Very, very excited. The last one out of Manchester. Manchester Evening News reporting. You mentioned this in the rundown yesterday. We didn't run with it, but I've read it again. And Ivan made a mention to Optus Sport. Optus Sport actually ran with the story as well here in Australia. But Coutinho, Man United.
It's in the rundown because it is something that will generate discussion here on FNR.
Real discussion, or is it just a bit of paper talk?
Oh, there is a little bit around this. And why there is because the rumour has started to emerge a lot more strongly now, is that there is the possibility of Neymar returning to Barcelona from PSG. What that would mean is that Barcelona would need to raise funds for this, because their revenue spend versus how much they pay players is very, very narrow.
Understood.
One player that could potentially go, because he's only featured 9 times for Barcelona this year, is of course the Brazilian international. If he moves, that might free up a little bit of room. Also, that would also mean that Ousmane Dembele would need to go at some stage somewhere to sort of help that Brazilian to come across from Paris.
If Neymar,
so it's a bit of a merry-go-round.
I see how you've done
it.
You've worked backwards. Very smart. But if Neymar were to go back to Barcelona, yes, there would have to be a couple of players to make way. What would you feel about Neymar in that way? The PSG, looking back at his career, hypothetically speaking, if you were to do that, how would you feel about these last few seasons?
Yeah, you'd have strange. To sort of swallow your pride a little bit, similar to what Leonardo Bonucci has had to do and what a lot of Juventus fans have had to do over the last 6 months. Swallow your pride, get him to apologise for whatever reason, and somehow move on and look towards the team rather than the individual.
One of the other Barca players who's been linked away, we mentioned yesterday, Denis Suarez, reports saying, Diario Sport saying that he has said yes to join Arsenal this month.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see whether he actually moves now or whether he's kept in this Barcelona team until the end of the season. I still think he will be going pretty much in the next couple of weeks before January 31. He's fallen out with Ernesto Valverde. The relationship has started to sour a little bit, so I can't see him staying on for too many more weeks.
All right, let's go elsewhere. That's enough from the EPL for now. More to come in the second hour. Just a couple of other reports before we get into some of the bigger stories, in no particular order, but reports out of The Guardian are saying that Skriniar is back on the radar of Manchester United as well from a defensive perspective. Marca running with the headline that Higuain will be a Chelsea player. As we said, Chelsea will be looking for a striker to replace Morata, who very well will be on his way to Sevilla. Gazzetta have confirmed that Udinese have signed Stefano Okaka on loan from Watford for 6 months. So Okaka, Udinese and Watford doing some business. No surprise, they're owned by the same people, and they very often
throw players around
Udinese, Watford and Granada. But the Italian, or former Italian international, I think he played one or two caps, is making the move back, a career that's never really...
It's promised so much, and it's never fulfilled that potential, you're right.
And other reports in Italy also go on, and we'll pick up discussion here now, go on to add strength to the discussion about Modric. It was very statistically focused, this latest report I read out of Italy, but 0 goals, 2 assists, 18 games, Modric, Real Madrid, nearing an end. Real could cash in on Luka Modric, given his Ballon d'Or. Mm-hmm. Which, if they are to sell him in June, the Ballon d'Or was 6 months' price. They're not selling him now. We're not saying that. But if they are to sell him in June, the Ballon d'Or was 6 months' price. So 6 months prior, should those average numbers continue, he was the best player in the world. I think the timing would be right there for this new Real Madrid era to start without him.
It would be right. But problem number one, if you look at it on January 9, is that Toni Kroos' teammate's injured for a month.
Yes, that's why we don't sell him now.
No. So if you exclude that part...
They're going to lose to Ajax. Real Madrid will go out.
Well, they might get Toni Kroos back for that Champions League
but
run.
They've got too many issues. Ajax will be red hot, raring to go. They're flying in the air of his year. But anyway, another discussion.
Anyway, that's for another day. Maybe tomorrow we'll have
tomorrow,
a discussion.
Tomorrow.
Or Monday or Tuesday next week. Whenever.
It's also Friday. Like. Go on.
Anyways, selling Modric... It'd be interesting to see if Perez is willing to let go of two Ballon d'Or winners in two consecutive years.
Yes.
That's the big thing, because he does like seeing that golden ball in one of his players' hands. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if he can part. With this whole revolution that we spoke about yesterday going on at Real Madrid with these younger individuals sort of under the age of, say, 22, 23, it might actually start to tempt him if the right offer is made. It'll be interesting to see if...
What do you think would be a right offer, though?
See,
keeping in mind, I floated figures of 50 to 70 million for Callum Wilson. Where does Luka Modric fit? His age, his quality, where does he fit?
He'd probably fit in and around that mark. Mm. I don't think you're going to get 100 for him. That's probably going a bit too stretchy. I'd say you probably get closer towards the 70 than you would the 50 at this age. He's 31, 32... So if you go with even of those numbers that we had yesterday from the CIES, he's in and around that.
He wasn't in that top list.
He wasn't in the top list, but he's in and around that 50 to 70 range. So somewhere around there, maybe a good 65 million might be just enough to see him join. But if he
33 years of age.
Yeah. He's probably got, what, 2 good years left in him?
I've just looked at transfermarket.com, a very reliable website that values players in their own way. Now, yesterday we brought you the official CIES results of their latest player valuations. Kylian Mbappe was number one at €217 million. According to this, because of his age, 33, Luka Modric only valued at €25 million.
That's a bit unders. Sorry, I don't think Perez is going to sell... Modric for $25 million.
They have Kylian Mbappe here valued at €200 million. So they're about $20 million off. So, again, I think that's unders. I don't think they'll lose Modric for that. But they also have Callum Wilson valued at $25 million. What I take from that is that if the market is physically saying that Wilson would get 50 to 70 and they're both valued the same here, I'd say 40 to 50 maybe for Luka Modric.
Maybe a little bit more because he does have that little bit of title, that Ballon d'Or in his wings that he can sort of shine around and actually show a few people. So maybe a little bit more than that, but not too much.
It's very interesting, the player valuations.
Well, whilst you're looking at player evaluation, Ivan's come through and he says, I could see Modric go to Serie A for some reason. Well, you've been on that bandwagon for a little while now. You could see happening last season before he was, last window, I should say, before he was even given his Ballon d'Or post-Cristiano Ronaldo moving away from Real Madrid. So maybe there are a few people that are starting to come to that way and start to think that way as well.
Absolutely. I think it's the right timing, and I think that Inter are at a position where they could afford him. Keep in mind they may still offload Nainggolan because they just paid that 44 million. So it makes sense for me. They could do with another star. Serie A, with the arrival of Ronaldo, has taken themselves to another level, and I think that the timing is right for all involved. It also forces Real Madrid into re-evolutionising their midfield.
Yeah, it would. It'd be very, very interesting to see where they take it.
Well, where will they take it? Because there's a player now, the Independent in the UK has reported this, there's a player that they are now beginning to commence preparations for an assault in the summer. Do you want to take a guess as to who that is?
I'll let you tell me.
Christian Eriksen. This is one which, if Tottenham miss the Champions League again, I'm certain will go through. If they make the Champions League, I'm confident it will still go through. Eriksen's timing could be right now to take the step up and move to Real Madrid.
What happens if they don't make the Champions League? They
Real Madrid.
Now that is the spanner that is in the works.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That throws a massive spanner in the works. But no, I still think if Real Madrid come calling for Christian Eriksen, I don't think that the Champions League for Real Madrid will matter that much. Still to play at the Santiago Bernabeu in front of the Real Madrid faithful and for Real Madrid is every player's dream. I think Eriksen now could be that player to come in and replace a few of these stars that may move on.
Oh, I don't know. I'm still a bit iffy.
£100 million they're saying they're starting to table an offer for.
Well, does Tottenham need the money? Does Daniel Levy need to sell one of his big assets in order to balance the books out a bit?
Well, actually, I said no. Yes, they do. Because they've just spent all this money on this new stadium. They were unable to sign any players in the summer. Yes, they may need to go all out to keep hold of Kane to ensure the goals are still there. And they may need to move Eriksen on, cash in, buy two or three stars to complement the remainder of the team and add some much-needed depth.
I see. I still think if you've got your piece and it's a nice one, don't cash him in. I think
that's true. But if the piece wants to play at a bigger club.
But I also think after what happened with Modric from going from Tottenham to Real, after what happened with Gareth Bale. I also think after what Gareth Bale did going from Tottenham to Real Madrid.
Eriksen the next piece.
Eriksen might be the next piece, but what did Tottenham do with that money?
Not much.
They went and bought 9 players.
They did nothing with that money.
They did absolutely nothing with those players.
No, but you would hope. But that has been a consistent issue for top English clubs recently. Too much money for their own good and not using it wisely, and they've made poor decisions. What on earth did Liverpool do with the Torres money?
Yeah, true. Andy Carroll.
The Suarez money. Half of Southampton. So now they've got their act.
Well, they might be saying, Sadio Mane's a good pickup.
Mane's a star.
40 million. Mane's a star. Bit of a bargain.
But overall,
Jordan Henderson become their captain.
Overrated, but good player.
Nonetheless.
But again, they've made some questionable decisions with large sums of money. Tottenham's one was the best example.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale, all that money, and then they bought 9 players and none of them worked out.
Well, I think the only one that's half worked out is Eric Lamela because he's been allowed to stay on for
But the fact that we're saying Lamela has worked out, remember his first few years at Tottenham?
Yeah, exactly.
He was nowhere near
nowhere
it.
Near
so,
it.
And I'm a big fan of Lamela, but again, they haven't been able to make wise decisions here. If they can make a couple of signings, not 9, but two signings to replace Eriksen, Tottenham have built themselves up to a point now where players will want to play at that club. Who knows who they could buy with the money that they have. And they've also got the lure of the new stadium, potential Champions League. They're always in the title race. They still are now. So I like where they're at, Tottenham. But if Eriksen needs to go for them to bring some money in, I think it should be considered. Not saying go through, but certainly considered.
I'll let you have your say on that. I think if Tottenham are going to be serious, and they're going to be serious for the next few seasons, they must keep him and withstand any Florentino Perez offer that comes their way.
I agree. But again, if Eriksen wants to play for Real Madrid, that will happen. Pepe, speaking of former Real Madrid players.
Well, we touched on him earlier in the program.
Well, it's official. It's official now.
Yep.
He's gone. Porto signed. He's already uploaded a selfie with Ian Casillas, the Porto shirt. Looking very good. Yep. I'm excited for them, Porto. We said yesterday they're flying in the Primeira Liga, top of the table. They now bring in a former, well, not a former great of the club, but a great of Portuguese football who's played at the highest level and done wonderful things. He returns to Porto, a club he spent three seasons at between 04 and 07 before joining Real Madrid. He reunites with his former Real Madrid captain, Iker Casillas, and he joins a squad and a team that have won 18 straight. 18 straight wins, Rick, across the Portuguese Cup, the Primeira Liga and the UEFA Champions League.
They're on fire, the Dragons, aren't they? When you think
into the round of 16 against Roma in the Champions League. They've got two Champions League legends in the squad. Mm. Exciting 2019 ahead.
I wonder if he'll crack the team. I wonder if he'll be in the starting 11 ahead of the likes of Militao, who's actually been on fire defensively for the Dragons. So a couple of little headaches there for the Portuguese outfit to sort of work out. And you would say on paper, if you look at the reputation and what he's been able to do, you'd say, here you go. Go command that central defence. Go lead this team.
But
he's 35, joining a new team, mutually terminated his contract from the Turkish club. So he's got a couple of little issues also to work out there. So it'd be a very, very interesting time if you are a Dragons fan.
I'd be very excited if I was a Porto fan coming into the second half of the campaign, particularly with that UEFA Champions League tie, very winnable tie against Roma to come next month. Speaking of Roma, they have a player who is... Well, he's been linked to Arsenal and Bayern Munich particularly, Cengiz Under. I don't know if this has been done purposely, but Sky Italia reporting that Roma have upped the valuation of the player to scare off Arsenal and Bayern Munich. Monchi not willing to let him go.
Well, if I was Monchi, I wouldn't let him want to go either. But the problem is if the release clause is ultimately met, or if the right price does come in, you wouldn't sell. I know it's the same sort of argument we just had with Christian Eriksen, but they are at two very different levels of their career. Under was brought in to basically be the Mohamed Salah replacement alongside Patrick Schick. Schick more or less looks like he's going to be out the door, depending on what Edin Dzeko does with his injury and whether he's able to return to full fitness. They didn't pay too much for Under, if I'm not mistaken. Was it 20 million, 21 million?
If that.
All of a sudden, if a 50, 60, 70 million euro offer were to come in for him, you'd be silly not to take it.
I would take it if I were Roma. They still have some wonderful wingers in that squad, some experience with youth. They've got Justin Kluivert in, of course, this season from PSV, Ajax. He came in, of course.
I'm sure many Dutch fans would not be liking you right now, saying the wrong one. The fierce rivalry.
Stunning player. Yes. Of course, Ajax. Stunning player who's come in. They've got Diego Perotti. They've got El Shaarawy. They've got some other players in those positions. If you are to quadruple your money in the space of a 12-month period, you take it. But they want to keep him for now, according to those reports. So Arsenal have turned their attention to another winger, Carrasco. Ooh. So reports now saying that Yannick Carrasco, of course, is playing in China. Arsenal will win the race, as are the latest reports, despite the interest of AC Milan, who are very close, and Manchester United. So all of a sudden, the third team in the mix for Carrasco, he still plays in China. What's the best move for the Belgian winger here?
The best move is probably to stay where you are and work out
cash
with
in.
cash in in China. Well, he's going to get a much higher wage in China compared to, say, Arsenal. Milan is another one that I've read a few times, and maybe even a return to Atletico Madrid if they can squeeze him in. But he obviously wants game time at a higher level. And that's what these rumours are all leading me to believe.
That's right. The fact that these clubs are back in the market for Carrasco means that there must be some dialogue about him returning to top European
clubs.
Maybe
he doesn't want to be under Leonardo Jardim, their new coach. That's the other thing that has been sort of emerging for me out of this discussion about Carrasco. Arsenal could fit him in as a winger, as a right winger. That would be a nice move for him. It would mean that Alex Iwobi would probably step down from those odd starts that he does get. It would also mean that, well, what do you do with, say, Denis Suarez as well? Because Suarez can move out to the wing if need be. What does that then do as well for Lucas Torreira in that midfield as well? So there's a few little headaches that do need to be resolved. What do you do with Granit Xhaka? I know they all sort of play a little bit differently in that midfield, but there's four players I've just named that, of course, Unai Emery would need to accommodate. And if they go and get Carrasco, well, What does that do to the team?
Well, what does it do to the team? It adds some depth. It causes some headaches, and I think that's welcome for Arsenal at the moment because there's still no certainty to finish in the top four. There is a link. There are a couple of links with him, but again, where he eventually makes the move to, well, time will tell. But again, what I take away from it is that, as per the Sky Italia reports, he wants a return to European football, and the timing may now be right. But he, Denis Suarez, as well, as you touched on, who does have a relationship formally with Unai Emery, could make for an interesting period for Arsenal in this second half of the campaign. Two final transfer stories before we wrap up this first hour on Facebook Live. Again, remember, in the second hour, full previews of the League Cup and all the other action to come tomorrow morning. Of course, Manchester City in the semi-final against Burton, headlining that. But these last two stories to come out of Italy, Sky Italia again. Çalhanoğlu for Milan was all but set to leave for Leipzig. Reports saying, though, that Gattuso has blocked the transfer at the last minute, wants to keep the player.
Similar to what Sarri did with Fabregas, according to all reports, this one. So I'm interested to see what Gennaro Gattuso is going to do with Çalhanoğlu when he hasn't been able to get anything out of him at all. And he
Nothing.
Is a concern.
Is it just depth?
Well, it's the only thing it can be. But the problem is he doesn't even add any depth because when he actually is fully fit and available, he sits on the pine.
Mm.
So what? Does Gennaro Gattuso want players to depth, you know, add more pine people? Is that
just
the only reason you keep
him? Just watch him coach and play a few minutes at
Is
the
that
end?
The only reason you keep him? If Leipzig are willing to buy the player and pay good money for him, and the two clubs have agreed, why is the coach getting in the way? He hasn't come out and said, well, we need to obviously try and replace him, similar to what Sarri has said. So it's very, very strange all of a sudden.
Who knows? Maybe he sees him as part of his longer-term plans. Has played some minutes recently, but again, Gattuso, the deal was done. Gattuso's blocked it at the last minute. I always find that bizarre when a coach blocks a deal at the last minute. Have they not been having these discussions for the
last
month?
Weeks and weeks and months and months. That's right.
Anyway, one club who certainly are having discussions, and this club are turning into the Italian Manchester United, as per Ivan's comment earlier. But latest reports from various outlets in Italy about your club Juventus, Rick.
Let me put the Juventus hat on.
They are targeting, and I've speculated this before, but this was actually published on the front page of a newspaper yesterday. Juve target three Frenchmen for next season. We know who the three Frenchmen are, but very, very possible that, well, two of them maybe could be them. And of course, if you're not across who I'm talking about, three Frenchmen to Juventus, two players, one coach. Paul Pogba, Kylian Mbappe, Zinedine Zidane. Two of them formerly of Juventus, in the case of Pogba, Zidane. One in Mbappe, who, well, clearly no link to Juve, but has been strongly touted as an addition to the squad in the summer, potentially at the expense of Paulo Dybala, who would be sacrificed. But very likely we could see at least a pursuit for all three individuals.
Well, with Zidane, well, he's back in some shape or fashion within sort of the back end of Juventus. That's the first thing. It'll all depend on what Massimiliano Allegri wants to do. I keep on saying this over and over and over and over and over again. If Allegri wants to be at the club, they're not going to sack him, considering he still gets the domestic doubles on a regular basis. And he does seem to have a track record of getting this Juventus team into a quarterfinal and beyond of a Champions League. Pogba, well, I think Pogba ultimately has priced himself out of rejoining Juventus. If he goes there again, it'll have to mean that Dybala or somebody or a couple of other pieces in that midfield need to go. Juventus don't have that much revenue to spending space left now with Ronaldo there.
Dybala.
That also means the same thing with Kylian Mbappe. If Kylian Mbappe is to join Juventus, well, then Paulo Dybala must leave.
That's why I said one or two of... I could see Zidane, but one of those two French players. And I think Dybala would be the one to make way in any case, just simply due to his value.
Yeah.
Keep in mind as well, if Pogba were to come in, it'd be great to see Pogba and Dybala reunite. But in midfield, well, Milan and Pjanic, I guess, would command some money, but they need another midfielder, not to sacrifice a midfielder and bring in another
That's
midfielder.
Right.
So it would make more sense to sacrifice a player in an area where you have an abundance of talent. That's up top.
Wingers. Playmakers, I guess.
In a more attacking role than your traditional central midfielder. But that's the latest on Juve. More on that story and all the other transfer talk that we've had in this hour to come in the second hour. Very last one. Congratulations, of course, to Mohamed Salah.
Yes. yes, congratulations.
Back-to-back African Player of the Year, of course, 2018. No surprise. People thought he would win the Ballon d'Or just prior to the Champions League final. He certainly was in the mix. He finished in the top five.
Fourth, if I'm not mistaken.
Fourth. He was in the top five.
Yep.
That's fourth. Well done to him. Congratulations. We'll bring you the Team of the Year out of Africa as well in the second hour. Aubameyang, Salah and Mane up top. That's a fierce strike force. But that and more to come. Do stay tuned to our app or our website, footballnationradio.com, for that second hour. But as always, we thank you for joining us here on Facebook Live for the first hour. That's where we'll leave it now. We'll see you tomorrow at the same time. So for now, for myself, Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea, this has been Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR. Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio for our second hour of today's program. We hope you're with us in the first hour where we explored some of the biggest transfer stories in world football. Some of the names that we covered: Christian Eriksen, Gonzalo Higuain, Luka Modric, Alvaro Morata, Cesc Fabregas and more. We'll recap the latest news with all of those players in this second hour. Some big stories doing the rounds. They could all potentially be on the move. Find out who, where and what is taking place. Manchester United have been linked to a couple of star defenders out of Italy as well, with up to €100 million being reported for one of them in particular. Santiago Solari has slammed the VAR. Real Madrid have had a tough start to 2019. Find out what he said shortly. We've also got some quotes from a brother, one of the brothers of Paul Pogba, who has slammed Jose Mourinho. So a lot of slamming going on in this second hour, Rick. Looking forward to getting into it.
Just to add a bit of drama and effect there.
No worries at all. If you'd like to slam anything, give us a call, 99944999, or you can tweet us anytime at FNR_radio. Before we get to the news, Rick, yesterday we popped up a video on our social media about Mbappe, the dream signing, it could happen. Now, this was referencing the big story we brought you yesterday about Juventus's interest in Kylian Mbappe and potentially willing to sacrifice Paulo Dybala to go the other way. Just some of the thoughts from our fans that have come through. Joe said, I'd keep Dybala. Interesting. Steve said, no way. They shouldn't, but who knows? So maybe in support of Dybala. Danny, though, has said Juventus could not afford Mbappe. If Ronaldo cost $116 million, US dollars, and he's 36, well, he's not 36, but he's older, Mbappe would be worth $250 million, well, actually €218 million, according to CIES. At least, even with Dybala on the table, no chance of this happening. And then Stevens come through and said, the new Galacticos minus the trophies.
There you go.
Your thoughts on some of those comments?
Well, I've argued previously, and I argued this with the whole Higuain-Dybala saga. If you needed to make room for one of them, Higuain was the one that ultimately went, but I would have kept Higuain now in hindsight, which is what I was arguing all those many months ago. As for now Dybala, Mbappe, it's how Juventus see themselves structuring up top going forward. Do they need another right winger? Well, don't they have Bernardeschi and Douglas Costa? Mm. Yes, Mbappe is an upgrade on both. Yes, he is much younger than both. But he's going to cost the arm, the leg, the house, the car, the villas, everything else, basically, to get him in. And he will cost one of your biggest assets going forward.
Yes. Yes, but he could then become your biggest asset going forward. But it is a very difficult deal, you would imagine, for it to go through. But the interest is reportedly there. And thank you for everyone who contributed and engaged with us there. We always appreciate your thoughts. And again, if you'd like to do it live on the program, we are live for another 50 minutes. But 99944999. Rick, over to you.
Yes, thank you. And Egypt has won the rights to host the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations in June. Egypt beat South Africa by 16 votes in hosting the event. Cameroon was originally meant to host the showpiece, but was stripped of the staging rights because of slow preparations. And in more news out of the African continent, Liverpool and Faroe star Mohamed Salah has won his second CAF Player of the Year award. Congratulations there to him. Salah scored 44 goals for club and country in 2018 and won the English Premier League's Golden Boot Award. Tottenham have taken a one-goal lead into the second leg of their Carabao Cup semi-final after narrowly defeating Chelsea 1-0. A controversial Harry Kane penalty was converted by the Spurs captain just before the half-hour mark. Kane now becomes the fourth-highest Spurs all-time goal scorer on 160. And in other cup action, diverting our attention to France, Strasbourg have claimed a victory over Lyon 2-1 with Nabil Fekir missing a penalty, while Sporting Gijon have beaten Valencia 2-1 in the Copa del Rey round of 16 first leg. There were also two games played in the Asian Cup, with Iraq claiming a 3-2 win over Vietnam, while Saudi Arabia hammered a 10-man North Korea 4-0. There were also some catch-up Ligue 1 fixtures, with Amiens and Angers playing out a scoreless draw, while Nantes overcame a 10-man Montpellier outfit to edge past them 2-0 and move away from the relegation zone. And finally, in some transfer news that was announced overnight, we brought you yesterday the news about Pepe to Porto, but also Barcelona have announced that they have signed Toulouse defender Jean-Claude Todibo. The 19-year-old has played only 10 times for the Pink City club, and the Blaugrana will acquire his services for free in the summer on a Bosman transfer.
That's always good.
It is always good, and when you're getting Adrien Rabiot as well for free, it makes two players for practically nothing sound even more enticing.
Wow.
Adrien, back to you.
Nicely done. Now, we were going to discuss in the first hour, but we didn't.
We ran out of time.
So take me through the African Cup of Nations hosting saga, because that's interesting. So you're telling me that the Cameroon were meant to host it this year.
Correct.
That fell through.
Correct.
Now, while you were delivering the news headlines, I cut you off because we've seen so many, in fact, not so many, every World Cup host has been under pressure this century. South Africa, they're not going to be ready. They're going to lose the rights. Brazil won't be ready. They'll lose the rights. Russia have got all sorts of issues. England are on standby. Never has this actually taken place. But now you're telling me that they have been offered it in 2021 when Ivory Coast were meant to host.
This is where everything is now murky. The waters are very, very, very unclear what is happening. Yes, you are right in that part. So what the CAF do, the Confederation of African Footballers, what they do is they announce the winners two editions in advance.
Okay.
So obviously when they announced Cameroon in 2019, they also announced the Ivory Coast for 2021 and Guinea for 2023. Mm-hmm. Because Cameroon have been slow in their progress and they've obviously now given it to Egypt, they're going to give Cameroon a second chance to actually host this tournament in 2021. Mm. Well, this has gone up the nose of the Ivory Coast, as it should, because the Ivory Coast have actually gotten things into place to be ready for that tournament in time. Basically telling Cameroon, well, tough, you're not ready, you're not getting anything, you're not hosting the AFCON tournament at all.
Mm.
So the Ivory Coast now have actually launched legal proceedings to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. They say they are the natural rights holders to host the tournament in 2021. If anybody else tries to take that off them, we are going to challenge you in a legal sense.
But that's fair enough, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
They would have been putting plans in place for the time since they were announced as hosts.
What makes it even more interesting, so another layer on top of this already complex layer, is that Guinea are actually saying we are prepared to delay our 2023 World Cup, African Cup of Nations, and host it in the next edition in 2025. So you've got the two competing hosts in the next two editions. One is saying, no, we're going to stick fat and we're going to stay with when it was originally announced. Mm. The other is saying, you know what, we'll take a couple of years to be even more ready.
That's strange. That's very strange and confusing.
It's going to get even murkier and murkier and murkier.
But this year it'll be in Egypt.
Correct. That is correct. That is affirmed. Seven stadiums are ready to go, and this is going to be very, very interesting.
That's a huge win for all involved. Very exciting times. Cannot wait to see what takes place, and really excited for the upcoming minutes, Rick. plenty more to come in this program. Now, one story that you touched on yesterday that we didn't discuss as well because we ran out of time. Let's have a quick discussion about this. My enthusiasm levels are through the roof at the moment. But, Rick, listen to this.
Listening intending.
Okay, listen. Arsene Wenger could return to management in a surprising role as Qatar head coach. That's right. Arsene Wenger has been approached by Qatar regarding the national team's manager position, according to reports in France. Of course, left Arsenal in the summer after managing the club for 22 years. And according to France Football, in preparation for the 2022 World Cup, Qatar would like to have a big name on the bench of its national team. Now, Rick, I've known that for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent a lot of time out in Qatar. I've known that. Is Wenger the man that could take Qatar to the highest level of world football? Not saying they're going to win a World Cup, but would Wenger and what he offers be well-suited to a young, up-and-coming Qatari side?
Possibly, but as we have seen, well, pretty much since they actually were awarded the World Cup and this has already ended, or the previous World Cup in Russia has ended, Qatar have actually been getting some half-decent results.
They have.
They're not brilliant,
no,
but they're half-decent and they show that things are progressing in a good manner. Obviously, they are, of course, competing in the Asian Cup.
Mm.
So, depending on what does happen there, if they're exited by the group stage, I would say, yes, go after him.
Mm.
But if they somehow get through to maybe a round of 6-8, quarter-final, maybe even a semi, you know what? What if they make the big dance?
Mm.
Then I would be saying, you know what? Maybe not Arsene Wenger. So I think it's conditionally based on what happens at the Asian World, at the Asian Cup. Come ask me in about 3 weeks' time when the tournament is over, and then I'll revisit it. But if you just look at it from a purely big name, celebrity type name in the footballing world, then yeah, Arsene Wenger would meet that criteria.
That's what they want.
But he'd be 73, 74 come the World Cup.
The current manager is Felix Sanchez, who is Spanish, and he has been with Qatar since 2006, Rick. This is why I take your point on board, but the current manager will not be the manager at the World Cup. He's been with Qatar since 2006. Now, I can tell you, in Qatar in 2006, there wasn't much. It's changed drastically in the last 15 years. And since 2006 till 2013, he was with the Aspire Academy. Now, Aspire Academy is the home of Aspatar, the world-class medical training facility. So he's worked there for 7 years and then gone through the Qatar youth ranks, the 19s, the 20s. He's still the under-23 manager as well. Mm. Now, keep in mind, most of the Qatari national team players are young. They're younger because they've been brought in, they've been neutralised, a lot of them, foreigners who have come in. The Qatari population is quite small. So
naturalised, not neutralised.
Naturalised, my mistake. Point being, you understood exactly what I meant.
I know exactly where you're going with
naturalised, this. Neutralised, how silly of me. 2017, Qatar, he's taken charge of the national team, but he'll be involved, but he won't be the national team coach.
Do you think he'll slip down if Wenger were to be appointed?
He'll remain as the 23's boss. He will remain as the 23's boss. So the project is there that they've just had individuals in place to hold out until the right individual comes about. Whether or not that's Wenger, it will be an individual of that profile. No doubt about it.
The other name that rings a bell to me, and I know he's in already the system, so to speak, he's in Saudi Arabia. I think he's in Saudi Arabia still, is the former Barcelona midfielder.
Xavi. He's in Qatar.
Al-Saad. My apologies.
He's been linked. He has been linked. But I don't think he'll
be ready with all the coaching, astuteness, and everything that is required for the national team?
No. I don't.
Because he's got, if you talk about profile, you talk about name, I think he's got a bigger name than Arsene Wenger, I think across the world, but definitely within Qatar ranks.
No doubt, but not as a coach. And they are going for a big, big name coach. No disputing that. Some of the names that have been thrown around are quite extraordinary. And Arsene Wenger is at that level. He is. But yes, Xavi currently playing at Al-Saad, and obviously Al-Saad, one of Qatar's biggest sides, but I think he'd be more of an ambassador as
Fair
opposed
enough.
To an actual coach.
Fair
maybe
enough.
An assistant to someone who gets involved there. But it's an interesting time because the point you made, which is very true, they're playing some good football. Their results have been promising. And that's pleasing because at this stage, they're very likely to go into that 22 World Cup as the lowest ranked nation, irrespective of 48 nations or not. Very likely they'll go in as one of the lowest ranked nations. But if they get their act together, maybe have a deep run at the Asian Cup, it sets them up perfectly. And you know what as well? You say that if their results go well at the Asian Cup, that maybe the coach would stay. I don't think the coach stays under any scenario, But maybe it adds more of a reason for Wenger to get involved. Maybe there's more promise and more belief in this nation if they are competing in the continental competitions. So I see that as an appeal for Wenger to get involved. If they've think about how far they've come in the last 4 or 5 years. They've put a lot of money and effort into their youth development, and they're starting to see the reward now. They've attracted big names. The sport's growing in the country. The competition locally is growing. The Qatar Stars League, I believe it's called, is growing. The clubs are competing in the Asian Champions League, and as a result, the national team is growing. So promising times. Obviously, the World Cup to come, that's another thing they'll have to contend with, not just their team's performance. But it is exciting times for people in that part of the world. But again, the big news, Arsene Wenger linked to become the coach of the Qatari national team.
Could you imagine if all of a sudden, you know, I'm talking hypothetically here, with after all these big names that have been linked after all these years, they go and find a local person, maybe they even keep Felix Sanchez. Could you imagine the letdown?
I don't think that's possible.
It is possible, but I don't think it will happen, I think, is what you're going to go with.
Rick, they do things in one way.
I know.
Big and it's bold, and that's the way that they'll do it. It's a fascinating place, fascinating country, and their mentality is dream big, and that's what is quite inspiring about that part of the world. And they will attract a big name. They'll pay a lot for a big name. Mm. I'm looking forward to it. Arsene Wenger could be that big name, but you are right. By the time the World Cup comes around and it's 2022, the end of the year, he could be 74, 75.
Could well be.
On that note, we are off to a very, very quick break. We've got a bit to do during the break. We'll be back very shortly with a whole lot more right here on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back. Your favourite program, Afternoons, FNR Football Nation Radio, Adriano Del Monte, Rick D'Andrea, transfer talk time. Rick, where do we start?
Very efficient there of you, Adrian. Well, let's go with the discussion that we had in the first hour, and we thought it was a little bit off-centre, and we found it a little bit strange, and it sounded as if United were becoming the new team that everybody's linked to. And we'll start with the whole Neymar, Coutinho and Dembele discussion.
I liked your analysis of this. You worked backwards. So you're saying that Neymar, you're welcome, Neymar may leave PSG and return to Barca. What does then that mean? And that came about when I raised the latest reports from the Manchester Evening News saying that United are in for Coutinho.
Correct.
Now, whether or not it's United, you looked at it the other way. Coutinho needs to leave. He hasn't played too much football this season. If Neymar does return, he would clearly be the one to be pushed out.
Correct. So why I came to that conclusion is, well, Coutinho's secondary role is to play as a left winger. We knew he did this at Liverpool, and that may have been part of the reason as to why he was then brought across to Barcelona. At that time, Ousmane Dembele had that very, very serious thigh and calf injury, if I recall, where he was out for the best part of 4 months. I think it was his first 4 months. I think he didn't play a game, or he played one game, and then he was injured for that extended period, and he sort of came back post-Christmas into the new year. So he was brought in, $142 million, the money that was partly spent or partly earned from the Neymar transfer. Part of it went to, obviously, Borussia Dortmund with Dembele, but the other part went to Liverpool for Coutinho. He hasn't settled in this season. Valverde really hasn't found a position for him in the centre of midfield, which is where he is more accustomed to playing. He's only made 9-10 appearances this season for the Blaugrana. Mm. So the talk and the speculation has started to mount. Well, what do you do with the Brazilian international? If you can get and recoup as a lot of the loss or the money that was spent on him, do you try and bring back Neymar, who, as we've touched on over the last few months, really wants to return to Barcelona? He's made no secret about it. He's obviously been sending messages to former teammates, saying he'd like to return to Barcelona. He'd like to return to the scene of where he's had a lot of success.
Why do you think that is?
I think he's just been attracted to the city, and he really found it at home. And when he ultimately decided that he wanted to get out of Messi's shadow, I think he's found himself in another bigger shadow. And that is, of course, in Kylian Mbappe. Much younger, seemingly maybe just that little bit lower level, but the upside is far, far higher than what Neymar's is.
I don't understand that argument. not wanting to be in the shadow. You're a Neymar. You're a top five player in world football. You're an all-time great of Brazil already. What is there to worry about? Lionel Messi is Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi isn't going to change.
Nope.
If you have an opportunity to play with another all-time great, maybe the greatest of all time, but another all-time great, so what?
Maybe he doesn't. This is the other thing that comes up. Maybe he doesn't want to be a mentor anymore. Maybe he wants to be mentored.
What he was.
What he was under Messi, under Swole.
It's not all it cracked up to be. He enjoyed maybe. Well, I guess.
He enjoyed learning rather than teaching.
And he enjoyed maybe the spotlight not on him all the time.
That's
right. Albeit it still was at Barca, given he is who he is. But obviously Messi does take a lot of the attention. Whatever the case is, the careers are short. Just worry about yourself.
That's my thought.
Win some trophies, enjoy some success, and enjoy running around while you can.
That's right. But if we sort of bring this then back to Coutinho, which is where originally it all began.
Before we got sidetracked.
But I think the sidetracking is part of the whole story in this merry-go-round. Coutinho, too, are likes of Manchester United. Where would he fit into that team?
But that's why I like your logic, but that's for why Coutinho should leave, not for why he should go to United.
Correct. Oh, okay. The links are to, we've been basically taught to Liverpool, and they've been to Manchester United.
But Liverpool, no. He's not going to go back.
I can't say that happening, and considering the money's basically been spent.
And how well they're playing now, they don't need Coutinho.
They don't need Coutinho, so I can't say that one happening. But to Manchester United, where the links have sort of started to simmer a little bit more, why would he go to United?
No, I have no answer for that. He wouldn't. For me, he wouldn't go to Man United.
He'd be, if he were to play, he'd be playing in a number 10 role, which is what he's done at Brazil, but everybody else seems to play at number 10 for them because they have that much dearth of talent. Would he really replace Juan Mata? And Juan Mata is a very good player. I
don't see the lure for Coutinho who's playing at Barcelona.
Would he replace Fred, who they've just spent the best part of 50-60 million euros on six months ago?
It's too hard to say with United. We said this earlier with Koulibaly.
Mm.
Who knows what manager's coming in? Who knows how they want to play? Coutinho is a player that will be better suited to some systems than others.
Correct.
We can't just say that he would be suited to this side. No, I just don't have any. I read nothing into Coutinho to Man United.
No, neither do I at this stage.
You know what? If they get their act together, a dream return to Inter Milan wouldn't be a bad thing. Keep in mind that it's failed with Nainggolan, and Nainggolan could be gone before he's even started. Coutinho obviously started his career there before joining Liverpool for next to nothing. Inter would have to pay a lot more than what they sold him for, but
they only sold him for 14 million.
That's right. They'd have to pay him. Well,
maybe 10 times as much.
He was just sold for 10 times as much. I don't think he'd fetch that amount now. Barca would have to take a loss. Regardless, it'd still be a lot more than what Inter sold him for. That could always be an option, but I don't think that Man United would be an option. To be honest, I don't think any of the English sides really would be an option. I think City have too many players in that role. Tottenham, no. Tottenham depend on what they do with Eriksen.
Could be.
Then money all of a sudden could become available for a Philip Coutinho. But then the rest of them.
Club that could potentially want him, but this would obviously be crossing a lot of borders and there'd be a lot of controversy, a la Ronaldo, a la Luis Figo.
Of course.
Could he make the move across?
Real Madrid, it depends what they do with these other targets. If they bring in Eden Hazard, no. If they bring in Christian Eriksen, no.
But we've talked about with Toni Kroos possibly leaving, Luka Modric possibly leaving. But he would fill in that role nicely.
But these are big money players. Real can't afford four big money players, three big money players. They could get one or two.
They've done it previously.
Well, they have done it previously, but
they had a Galacticos team that they actually won a Champions League with.
Yeah, they, of course. Could they? Well, I don't know. I don't know what the financial books of Real are saying at the moment, but I wouldn't think that they'd sign 300 million euro players next season.
Maybe. I'm shrugging my shoulders here because
I can see.
You've got to remember, they got James Rodriguez, Kaká, and Ronaldo within a World Cup cycle.
Yes.
They got two of them within the one transfer period, and then they went and got Benzema the next window. I'm not ruling it out.
That is true. And this is now the next page.
The amounts are much bigger.
Yeah.
That is the other thing.
That's
in relative
what scares
to,
me away from that logic. The amounts. Because it's the amounts now. Think again, it's all relative because 30 million in the 90s is probably 150 million today.
Correct.
And it's all relative. But 30 million times three is 90 million. 150 million euro times three, well, we're talking half a billion. It is all relative.
You're right.
It's all relative, but it adds up. So I think that Hazard will be number one for Real Madrid, and I do think that Eriksen maybe Coutinho. It does make sense, though. Your logic makes sense.
Thank you. Great
logic today on Philip Coutinho. But he's one player linked to United. Koulibaly was another. Skriniar from Inter Milan is another. Clearly, there are going to be many players, but clearly they can't make any big money signings until they know their new manager, because if they bring in the wrong manager for the wrong player, that will not work. That will set them back. And based on their interim appointment of Solskjaer, I'm not expecting Man United to make any big money moves until that man is appointed.
Correct. Maybe it is. Maybe they appoint Solskjaer come, say, early to mid-March, depending on his results or
it
whatever.
It could be for long-term, you're saying?
Yes.
It could be. Then they can start doing business.
They're not doing business in January. Don't do anything now. Don't do anything rash.
The only thing they could do now is fill a few holes if need be. And that's not spending money. That's filling a few holes. And that, yeah, maybe spending a little bit of money, but they're not spending 8-9 figures, however many it is. Elsewhere, other big stories were Chelsea Fabregas deal blocked to Monaco, not confirmed yet. The deal's done, but Sadi said no sale until we get a replacement. Barella from Cagliari, Paredes from Zenit are the two names linked. So for Fabregas, maybe he's out in the wilderness for a little bit now, because no football for Chelsea. He's already said goodbye, but he's not sold until they get a replacement. Tough position.
It is a little bit of a tough position. Normally you say goodbye, you don't come back. This isn't a Mario Balotelli type story where you have to sort of eat humble pie, and now he looks like he's in the wilderness himself. So
looks like it could be, though.
It looks like it could be, you're right. But, yeah, not a good look at the moment for Cesc. You'd think he will be gone. You'd think Chelsea would recruit somebody. Even if they have to go to their loan system and bring somebody through, you'd think they'd have enough.
They'll find a way.
They'll find a way to let him go on his own terms.
Up front as well for Chelsea, Higuain linked. Marcus saying he will be a Chelsea player. Interesting. Benzema linked to replace Morata. And Morata on the way out, Sevilla loan all but done, according to reports. So some changes there. But also, if they loan out Morata, Higuain will be a Chelsea player. Well, there's a lot of work to do for Higuain to become a Chelsea player, because AC Milan will not want to let Higuain go and not have a replacement.
Correct.
It's this exact same situation that Fabregas and Chelsea find themselves in. I don't think that's as straightforward as just saying the deal's done, the agreement's there. It means nothing until Milan find a replacement, because they've struggled for goals as it is. And if they take away a player who's still not scored as many goals as he's scored, but still scored some goals for them, that's a big, big issue.
Huge issue.
Don't read into that just yet. A lot of work to be had. Elsewhere, Arsenal want Cengiz Under. Roma are up their price. Arsenal may not get him, so they've looked to Yannick Carrasco. Chinese Super League, back to the Premier League. We've seen Paulinho do it. Guangzhou Evergrande, back to Barca, back to China. And he was good.
He was.
Could Carrasco follow suit and also have that level of impact at a club that, well, they could do. I think they could do Arsenal with another quality winger.
Yeah, they could. I mean, it'd be interesting to then work out what they would do for how Unai Emery, the Arsenal coach, would like to structure up his team. That means Alex Iwobi would be the one that would make way, you would think. But then what does that mean for the likes of Mesut Ozil? Had the wrong name there on my mind. What does that mean for him? Does that mean there's no more playmaker anymore in this team? Because Aubameyang is going to be favoured with Lacazette.
Well, recent reports about Ozil, who knows what his future holds? We still are unclear as to what the future holds.
What does that then mean?
So it could mean the beginning of the end of Ozil.
What does that then mean for someone like a Denis Suarez, who has also been linked, and you know the reports are saying that he's pretty much done. T's are done. You know, just requires the signature, obviously, on the paperwork. What does that mean for him?
Well, look, if Unai Emery wants to bring in these two players, he's part of their plans. Keep in mind, Unai Emery's been with the club for 6 months.
That's right.
He's worked with Suarez before. He's no history with Carrasco, but obviously if he's identified Carrasco as a player that they could maybe acquire on the cheap, given the fact he's playing in the Chinese Super League, bring him in and have an impact, he'll find a way to use them. And so for me, that means you question Ozil. That means that Ozil may be on the way out.
Sad times ahead there for the former German international.
But Unai Emery needs to make this club his own. And at the moment, well, it is, but it's not. It's not his own until, really, they're playing consistently in the way that he wants, with the players he wants, and there will be changes to come at Arsenal. I hope they can make the Champions League, but I'm losing hope that they will. And I'd like to see what Unai Emery could do with a proper season, a full pre-season, the squad he wants, and taking them into a Champions League, because we know he's been very good in European football with some former clubs. So we'll see how they go. But Cengiz Under appears they've been priced out of that, with Roma looking to keep hold of the young Turkish winger. Elsewhere, Italy, the big story was Juventus target three Frenchmen. Now, this was the headline of a newspaper front page. Three Frenchmen are Rick Pogba, Mbappe and Zidane. What does that do to the heart?
Oh, it, you know, rips it apart at the same time as makes it feel warm and cockled, to be perfectly honest. I mean, yes, it is nice to see a Zidane return. Yes, it would be nice to see a Pogba return. You know, Mbappe is the one of the dream signings, as we sort of put it yesterday in our little Facebook, you know, 60-second teaser. But the problem is, and I love saying is, that's very grammatical of me.
The problem is,
how much of the team, or how much of the cattle would need to be sold or passed on in order to bring them in?
And would it be worth it?
And in the end, three, four, five seasons' time, what happens if there's no trophy?
I agree, hence why Juve need to win this season with Ronaldo. But the first issue I have is the salary issue. 50 million euro per season for Ronaldo and Mbappe, according to reports, if he comes. 20 million he wants. Ronaldo earns 30.
Mm.
That is a lot of money in any club, any competition, anywhere, anything, to be paying two individuals.
That's right.
That's too much money. If one or two of those players go down, what do you do then?
You are paying a lot of money for somebody to sit at home.
And you hope that doesn't happen, but this is sport. Anything can happen. And if that happens to one of them even, that is a disaster.
Exactly.
That's
right.
Far too much money invested in just two individuals. So that's the element already I don't like about it.
And then when you also factor in with Pogba, well, didn't Juventus sign a pre-contract agreement with Aaron Ramsey? Only what, last week?
I still don't think that goes through, but yes, that's what the reports are saying.
The reports are saying that, then why do you need a second central midfielder?
Okay, from a Juventus fan perspective, would you rather, hat on, would you rather see Ramsey or Pogba?
Well, that's an obvious one. I'd rather see Pogba.
So why would they go for Ramsey then?
That one there is why I'm incredibly, incredibly baffled.
I don't understand
that. Some of the ridiculous money that has been offered for him. 7 million euros a season and a guy who's injury prone. But
sure, they'll get him for free.
That's, but you're still paying 21 million over 3 years.
You're still paying some money. But again, we're not looking at, if that isn't an issue for Juventus, given the fact they're considering Mbappe, I think that's a no-brainer. You go all out for Pogba. If you think he's settled and he'll settle the side and he's injury-free, in comparison, most are, that's a no-brainer.
Mm. Nonetheless, it's interesting to see that both are linked with a June move.
If you had to pick one of those three Frenchmen, one word, no explanation, who's the one that you're most confident, not would, will be at Juve, because we don't know, but could be at Juve for the start of next season? One.
Pogba. Yep. Pogba. Okay. Mbappe's hard. There's too many hurdles. Zidane
for me. I'd pick Zidane.
Zidane with Allegri. Allegri just depends what he wants to do. If he wants to stay, he'll stay.
That's the thing. If Allegri wants to stay, he stays. But I just think that Zidane slightly ahead of Pogba for me. I think Mbappe is a bit of a dream. But
bit of a wishful fantasy.
We'll see. Reports continue about Modric to Inter. We'll have more on that to come. 18 games, 0 goals, 2 assists this season. You can understand why those rumours are intensifying. But the point I raised in the first hour, Rick, was that, well, you know what? He's still the Ballon d'Or winner. He's still the best player in the world. So in 5 months from now, if those numbers remain where they're at, he still will come at a cost.
Yep, absolutely.
He's the best player on the planet. He's 32, 33, but he's the best player on the planet. He deserves to come at a cost. Real should cash in because, well, how many more years does he have at the top? So take your pick on who wins that deal if he were to join Inter in the summer. But maybe Inter have missed out on a year they could have capitalise on him now, but I think they'll still be willing to take him on board. Just some other stories before we preview some of the action tomorrow and wrap up the program. As I said earlier, The Independent are reporting that Real Madrid have begun plans to move for Eriksen next season, £100 million. The fee, Pepe, official to Porto. We brought you the news yesterday, but he rejoins the Portuguese Giants, reunites with Iker Casillas, his former Real teammate, and joins a side. They have a very exciting 2019 ahead of them. 18-match win streak across all competitions. Round of 16 against Roma in the Champions League. Good opportunity to make a quarterfinals. It's very exciting times. Against the Roma side as well, Rick, they eliminated a few seasons back in the Champions League qualifying round.
That's right.
Denied Roma an opportunity to go through in that competition. So some good recent history. Now another very experienced campaigner in the ranks. Things are looking good at Porto. In Italy, Milan Calhanoglu's sale has been blocked. Gattuso has refused to let him go. similar to the Fabregas saga, but there was a deal already in place in this case with Leipzig, not Monaco. And as we said, Benzema has also, according to reports in Spain, been touted as a potential replacement for Alvaro Morata, who could be on his way out of Chelsea as well. That's all the transfer news. So much transfer news doing the rounds, but we have some matches to look ahead to tomorrow morning and a few other stories as we near the end to this program. Let's go back to the pitch. We'll wrap up with these stories off the pitch as we end. But City and Burton tomorrow morning, Rick. How many?
Yep. Simple as that. I think after the confidence boost that Manchester City got from defeating Liverpool, after what they were able to do against Rotherham in the FA Cup third round, I think this is going to be a fairly routine type win. Maybe Burton might be able to sneak one in, to be perfectly honest, but it's very, very hard to not see Manchester City winning by a good three goals.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the performance that they put in against Rotherham in the FA Cup is a sign that they're taking everything very seriously. They're at near full strength. Even if they field a second-string side, it will be far superior to the Burton side, who, well, they play their football in League One, and their form in League One is such that they're a ninth-place team there, unbeaten in four in the league, but surely no match for the giants of English football. This very busy period now, it's a season-defining period for City. Liverpool have a very straightforward period ahead. We know that. Five or six very winnable games. No more cup action for them. They're out. That's a shame, but they'll be thrilled because their rivals, City, Chelsea, Tottenham, they've got so many fixtures to come in this period. And Manchester City now, a doubleheader against Burton, relatively easy fixtures in the Premier League, but it will take its toll at some point. Mm. And the unfortunate thing for City, now, we've cut up the Premier League season into blocks. This next block is the block before the Champions League resumes. This is City. Burton tomorrow morning, Wolves and Huddersfield in the league, Burton the return, and those four games to come in the next 14 days. After that, Burnley at home in the FA Cup, the next round, of course. Then Newcastle in the league on the road, and two home fixtures before the Schalke first leg. Those two home fixtures, Arsenal, Chelsea. So the problem with that for City is that they have one, two, three, four, five, six. Six fixtures in the next 20 days before two season-defining games, Arsenal and Chelsea. It will take its toll at some point, irrespective of who plays where and what. The club will be focusing on six fixtures before these two heavyweight clashes. I'm not confident at this point, just given what their form over the break, of course. I'm not confident that they'll be primed and ready to go, also with an eye on the Champions League as well. But they can only beat who's in front of them, and it starts tomorrow morning against Burton. But they will need to handle themselves in an efficient manner because, really, the two telling fixtures are at the back end of this run of games.
Yeah, they're going to have to basically get, what, all six wins.
Must.
And then hope that Liverpool maybe slip up once or twice in the Premier League and then bank up against Arsenal and get the 3 points and then obviously take care of Chelsea when they do play them ahead of the Champions League.
It's funny how the scheduling can come into play. Obviously, those two big games right before the Champions League, which is a trip as well for City. That doesn't help. They go to Germany, but it's a difficult period here for City, but their depth will be tested. This is it. These are the moments. This is why you pay your players, and this is why they get paid the big dollars. This is what they need to do. And I think they'll be okay initially, but I just question the back end of this stretch, Arsenal and Chelsea. I can see them dropping points in one, which could be detrimental for their title hopes. Coupe de la Ligue tomorrow morning, Rick. One team through this morning. Strasbourg through to the semi-finals. Three teams will join them tomorrow morning. Monaco, Bordeaux, Paris Saint-Germain all playing at home. Monaco up against Rennes.
Not an easy match here at all for the
Rennes,
Principality.
One of the form sides.
One of the form sides. I think they've only conceded one goal since Stéphane Julien, the new coach, has come through. And they've scored about six or seven, if I'm not mistaken. Monaco, yes, they might be just doing enough to seem as if their things are going right. But this is probably going to be their toughest test to date, especially since they've made a few new signings. They've got Ronny Lopez back. It's going to be interesting to see which Monaco team turns up. And more importantly, how many fans turn up to the Stade Louis II, because it's been pretty much D-E-A-D in there. No atmosphere.
No atmosphere at all. Bordeaux will be favourites to go through against Le Havre, and Paris Saint-Germain against Gamp.
Well, we know Bordeaux, unfortunately, they did lose in the Coupe de France on the weekend.
They did.
One less tournament to a team much lower as well.
Yes, a Ligue 2 side, but a Ligue 2 side in some good touch. This isn't a straightforward game, but they surely an opportunity to make amends immediately, because their opponents are mid-table in the second tier of football. And keep in mind, Rennes, who we did say the form side, they got through in the Coupe de France on penalties against Brest, who are second in Ligue 2. So it could be a tough night for Rennes if Monaco, a few of their new faces turn up. But that game and PSG-Gangomp, PSG expected to take care. It's a top v bottom clash of Ligue 1 sides meeting in the Coupe de la Ligue quarter final stage. So much football upon us, so much to come later this week. The league action resumes this weekend, of course, as well as the Copa del Rey tomorrow morning. Girona, Atleti, Getafe, Valladolid, Villarreal, Espanyol, Real Madrid, Leganes. Rick, Real Madrid, Leganes, the first leg of this round in this competition earlier. Oh, sorry, I forgot we're in 2019. January 2018, last year. These two sides met at this same stage of the competition. Real won the first leg 1-0 on the road. You aware what happened at the Santiago Bernabeu in the second leg?
I am very well aware.
Leganes got the points. They won 2-1 and they went through eliminating Real Madrid on the away goals rule. So they go to the Bernabeu for the first leg this time around, but they'll take some confidence from the fact that, okay, sure, they've lost three games in La Liga since against Los Blancos, but they've scored in all of those games. They've taken it up to Real Madrid in some of those games, but they did have that win at the same stage of the competition last season.
Absolutely no fear. They will go all out to try and get a result in their favour, maybe try and get one or two away goals, and hope that history can repeat itself, just reversing the ties.
Real Madrid, of course, losing 2-0 against Sociedad at the weekend. And Solari has come out again in the lead-up to this match and slammed the VAR. He said, it must be clearer. We have a right to defend ourselves. It wasn't good enough. He's still livid with what took place in that Sociedad game, where he believed that Sociedad were unfortunate not to concede a penalty. He felt that his side should have had a penalty against them. And also their penalty converted, he was very questionable about as well. And that's where the uncertainty around the VAR continues. Solari not happy at all. He needs his side to bounce back here and respond with a win. Their first, potentially, of 2019.
Yeah, he needs this more than ever, to be honest. This is when we see chips to the, or backs to the wall, chips down. He needs 3 points, so to speak. He needs the win just to really get the team back again. And they've all had a little bit of a dressing down in the dressing room. They've actually sort of had a bit of an open discussion, an open forum, where they've pointed fingers at one another, got everything off their chest, and let's just hope that for Los Blancos' sake, the atmosphere is at the Santiago Bernabeu that can lift them to getting the result in their favour.
All right, Rick, very, very last one. I'll get your thoughts on this. Paul Pogba's brother, Matthias, on Jose Mourinho at Man United. Just your quick thoughts on this as we wrap up another thrilling program. Mourinho was the problem. Mourinho and Pogba back in the news.
Agreed.
The problem was Mourinho right down the line. In the dressing room, outside the dressing room, everything. From what we see of Mourinho, he always wants to be the maestro, the centre of attention. Paul does not even think about that aspect. Now, those comments, I don't know why he said them now. It's over. But those comments are coming in relation to respond to those who may have said that Pogba was causing the issues and that Pogba was the ego in this situation. He's very strong of the opinion, no, that's not the case.
Well, it always was the discussion point, who goes first, Mourinho or Paul Pogba? Well, we know what's happened. Mourinho's gone. And what's happened to Paul Pogba?
He's flourishing.
He's flourishing. So all of a sudden, you have to agree with Matthias Pogba there when he makes these comments. I think he's spot on at the
big
moment.
Comments.
And, well, the results are speaking for themselves.
But I don't think necessary, the comments.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, going a bit too far.
Too far. Last one. Do you have the African team of the year there?
I do have it in front of me.
Give us that team of the year. Congratulations to Mohamed Salah. But to wrap up the program, of course, Salah, the player of the year in Africa. To wrap up the program, the 11 very quickly.
Yes, Dennis Oyango as goalkeeper. Serge Aurier, Kalidou Koulibaly, Eric Bailly, Mehdi Benatia in defence. Naby Keita, Thomas Partey and Riyad Mahrez as midfielders, Sadio Mane, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and of course the CAF African Player of the Year Award winner, Mohamed Salah.
Beautifully done. And that's it. We'll see you tomorrow at the same time. For now, for myself, Adriano Del Monte and Rick Dandre, this has been Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.